This podcast is brought to you by Julius Meinl Coffee.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Hello and welcome to Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and right around the world. Warm welcome to the program on a morning and afternoon here in Australia, Rick, where we haven't woken up to too much action on the pitch, but we will start to look ahead to what's to come this weekend across Europe's top club competitions with plenty of news circling. A very big story breaking right before us at the moment with regards to a potential new manager for Real Madrid. We'll have that man's name very shortly. A star player and former player of their rivals Barcelona is potentially returning to that club. More on that to come very shortly. So some big news doing the rounds and a couple of big games to come this weekend as well. As I said, we'll start to cast our eyes to those fixtures. The Milan Derby in Italy, Chelsea, Manchester United, Barcelona, Sevilla, and plenty more. We are streaming live on Facebook. Get on and say hello to us there. At FNR underscore radio is where you can find us on Twitter. And of course, if you tune in via our app or our website, footballnationradio.com, a warm welcome to you there. Also, Rick, the big news headlines, starting with one of a story that's really come out of nowhere, if you are opening with that story, but a story that's really come out of nowhere and will be a hot talking point today, that's for sure.
It will be the hottest talking point. It has only broken in the last 90 minutes or so. Good afternoon to you, Adrian. Good afternoon to all the listeners out there in FNR, Football Nation Radio land. Let's start with it. It's not even in our opening Facebook Live caption, but Real Madrid, it is believed, according to three sources around Europe that are in and have begun open negotiations for former Chelsea coach Antonio Conte. Straight out. Big. They are interested. It is only preliminary at this stage. The problem is with Antonio Conte is that he is currently in an unfair dismissal fight with Chelsea. Somewhere around the 10 million euro range is the figure that is still to be worked out. We'll bring you a lot more of that analysis when we actually talk about the topic in a few moments' time. But across to the rest of the other news and reports, even more reports are emerging that PSG star Neymar could be preparing to return to Barcelona. The 26-year-old is said to be frequenting and frequently returning to the city and meet and greet some of his former teammates. And the rift between him and the club has dissipated over the record-breaking transfer move. Neymar is also reportedly annoyed of being overshadowed by one Kylian Mbappe. And staying with PSG, the club are hinting that UEFA's financial fair play investigation will jeopardise their January transfer window plans. The French outfit feel that UEFA will not be able to conclude its investigation in time to meet the winter transfer period. In positive news, Kevin De Bruyne, it could be set to make his return for Manchester City in their first team this weekend when they take on Burnley. The Belgian international suffered a knee injury in training in mid-August and only returned to training before the international break. So good news there if you are a Blues fan. In other news, Fulham owner Shahid Khan has withdrawn his £900 million offer to purchase Wembley Stadium. Schalke defender Naldo, the veteran, the ageing veteran, has signed a contract extension with the club, tying the 36-year-old until 2020. He has even suggested that he'd like to play and might even go on field, well into his 40s. And finally, old friend Javier Tebas, the La Liga boss, the countdown returns to zero, is preparing a legal case in order to force La Liga matches to be played in the United States of America. Adrian, that is a very brief synopsis of the news. Back to you.
Lovely, Rick. Plenty of La Liga news on the agenda today. And again, the United States coming up as a talking point. What is the story around that latest development? So he's again defending the fact that he wants to follow through.
So at the moment, what the Tebas is doing, the La Liga boss, is he's actually going to take the administration, all the clubs and everybody at the moment that he's saying, well, you know what, we're not interested in going to Spain. He's actually going to take him to court to force this move over.
Again, my question is, why wasn't this addressed initially? Why is he taking the people to court who are opposing his idea. If he had had them on side from day one, he wouldn't be worrying about taking his own, not his own people, but people within La Liga to court.
Everyone's basically refuted it. And everyone's saying that, well, it shouldn't happen. Because they don't want it to happen. FIFA, UEFA, CONMEBOL, the Spanish Players Union. So everyone is against this move except Javier Tebas. It's because he's obviously wanting to hold relevant media to that 15-year agreement. And obviously there must be some watertight clauses in there that unfortunately won't enable the league to sort of break away from it all. It's just going to be one messy saga.
Absolutely messy. It has been very messy. But for a saga that's this messy, what I don't understand is, how was this not addressed initially? I know I've said it before, but how was it not addressed initially in the fact that this isn't just a decision. This isn't, okay, the VAR, monumental decision. But the VAR has come into play in competition A, and competition B, C and D have said, okay, we'll implement it as well and see how we go. This is a league-changing, a competition, a sport-defining decision. Mm. The first ever top-flight competition in Europe to take their football outside of their own shores. It is just incredible to think that all of these organisations were not dealt with, were not handled, consulted, and then obviously the approval came through, because it's ridiculous to think that this deep into... We're three months away now. January 27th.
We're
3 months away, and still this is the issue. And obviously, what's his gain? The monetary side from relevance and all those who are involved in the United States. But still no clear indicator as to what will take place, but he certainly believes that they will go ahead and play this game. So that's the latest there.
I just wonder if he might try and sort of keep the peace and sort of arrange something. Maybe this January, the match that is set to be scheduled, the Girona Barcelona, goes ahead.
Okay.
But maybe the other 14, because it is a 15-year contract, sort of get waved away because it is causing way too much controversy.
You don't see it the other way, perhaps? The fact that maybe they say, okay, let's put this one aside for now and let's renegotiate this 15-year tenure starting from next year, but let's get everything right first.
Well, it's one way or the other, though. You either, because I think because there are flights that are already booked, there is accommodation that has already been organised, this might be a bit too difficult to get out of. But going forward, I think that's where they seriously need to look at it. So that's why I think at this stage with Tebas and all these sorts of unions and FIFA and everybody else is getting involved, they might let this one go ahead, but the others are certainly going to be very much asterisk-based with the word pending right
now. I can't believe how regularly we've discussed this since the decision came through, but again, just goes to show that he had his own reasons for going ahead so promptly with the decision. I did think that at the start as well, how quickly the decision was actually made after the report surfaced.
It was very interesting that everybody else was saying no, 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 and he was the only one saying yes. But quickly, do you think this ultimately will see the match played on January 27th? Considering everything you know, considering everything you've read and everything we've discussed over the last few months, do you think the Girona Barcelona match, the one that is scheduled, will go ahead?
I do, and I do mainly because of your last point there, because it's already been publicised, the fact that this match will go ahead, it's been confirmed. So if there are individuals who have made plans accordingly, which I'm certain there have been, and obviously the clubs came out and said that we'd be willing to fund this, we'd fund that. I feel that it will be the former option that we said that whereby this will go ahead somehow, some way, they'll find a way. But then the remaining 14 years of this agreement will be renegotiated and may not go ahead from year two onwards. So yes would be my answer at this point. But again, taking someone to court now delays that process and makes that even less likely. So you can't be sure, but I will say, just given how close we are now, 3 months out, I feel it will go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's just too hard to reorganise everything. And plus, you've got compensation on top of that if things do get rearranged.
Poorly handled.
Very messy. Very, very messy.
Poorly handled. Everything on the pitch in La Liga going quite well. Quite an entertaining season. Some big storylines, big clubs struggling. It's been a very entertaining season of La Liga football. And while the two top stories that you raise off the top, Rick, quite incredible. And we'll start with Real Madrid, the one that just come to light in the last couple of hours. Sport Italia, Corriere dello Sport, amongst the publications that are suggesting that Antonio Conte is well and truly on the radar of Real Madrid. We know Real Madrid, the difficulty they face this season. Any club, let alone Real Madrid, would have faced difficulty after losing, yes, a manager who came in. Not much was expected of the manager because he was obviously working in the youth levels of Real Madrid, but came in and delivered at a level where, well, not many have delivered before. Three Champions Leagues, 2.5 seasons, an incredible short tenure, and most impressively, walked away on his own terms, which has not been seen before at Real Madrid under Florentino Perez. So Zinedine Zidane goes, Cristiano Ronaldo goes, of course, as well. He needs no introduction. It was always going to be difficult for Lopetegui coming in. That coupled with the fact that Lopetegui quit Spain on the eve of the World Cup. It was, for me, always a messy situation that was not going to end well for Real Madrid and particularly Lopetegui. And as per the latest report, it does appear that his future is more than uncertain at the club and Conte now being lined up as that replacement.
It is, and you're right. It was always going to be a poison chalice. But I remember when we had these discussions, even going back as far as June, I thought to myself, well, this is going to be a new Real Madrid era. But unfortunately, even under a new coach, it's the same old team way of doing things. You know, it's almost the poison chalice there at Real Madrid. No matter how much success you have, whoever does take over from you has even more pressure put on them to get a result even more than what the previous one did. So I do feel sorry for Lopetegui, considering what happened to him at the Spanish national team level, considering what is now happening to him. Antonio Conte, I've sort of said in the past where I sort of feel he might not be best suited for this role and what he can actually get out of this team and, you know, with all the available assets. I don't think he's the right person. But nonetheless, they've already started to speak to him. They've already started to speak to his agent. They've already started to sort of find out where the Italian does sort of sit in relation to that unfair dismissal claim that he has against Chelsea and everything else that is going on there. So it is the very first approach. We're not saying that all of a sudden Lopetegui will get sacked tomorrow and Conte will take over. We're not suggesting that at all. What we are saying is the negotiations, or at least the initial discussions, have begun, according to the latest reports emerging.
We know Real have been really struggling, and it feels like forever ago that there was club action, obviously, with the international break. But yeah, their form is such that they're one win from their last five in the league. And, of course, they're still on that dreadful run, Rick, where they have not scored in their last four games.
Yeah, it's some 409
not
minutes.
409. So this weekend, it's Levante at home in a match which, if they lose, Lopetegui could be sacked on the spot. But Levante at home, a Levante side who are mid-table, as you'd expect, but come in with some form. Lopetegui, again, I just feel that if they had handled that initial situation better, if Lopetegui just stayed with Spain and won the World Cup, as I feel could very well have happened, but regardless, if he just stayed with Spain, done what was required of him there and had some success in any capacity, and a successful run at the World Cup would have been just getting further than where they actually got, eliminated, of course, by Russia. But if they had just gone to a quarters, gone to a semis, reached a final, and then he had made the move into this role, there'd be a lot more tolerance and a lot more understanding to give the manager time to settle in. But the fact that he did come in early in the off-season, prior to the World Cup, that decision was confirmed. The pressure was always going to mount, again, on what was an already difficult situation with the departure of Zidane and all of that success. On top of that, the Luka Modric saga in the summer did not help.
Yeah.
So there's been all these uncertainties for Lopetegui, making it mission impossible. But you know what? To be fair, they're fourth. 2 points off the top. It's not that they've had a disastrous start, but this is what
they've
is required.
They've just had a disastrous month. They've had.
And he finds himself in this position now. So Lopetegui to leave, I think it's far too early. Far, far too early to be pulling the trigger and sacking the manager. But that's what they do, Real Madrid. And if Antonio Conte, they feel, is better suited, well, he's available certainly and keen to get back into club action. He's better suited. But is he better suited? How would he suit this current group of players at Real Madrid? Now, you said you feel maybe he's not, but from an on-field perspective, is he the right individual, the right character to lead this Real Madrid side to, well, perhaps a fourth straight Champions League?
And that's the biggest question of all, isn't it? I mean, Conte doesn't come in with the experience of having won the Champions League. He's only gotten a Juventus team to that. And unfortunately, we're bundled out by Real Madrid's rivals, Barcelona, in that 3-1 result. So it's a different kettle of fish. It's one thing to get a team to a Champions League final. It's another one to actually win in 90 or 120 minutes. And that's what Conte lacks. But even so, I don't think that with the players that Real Madrid currently have, they could play a 3-5-2 or even that 3-4-3 that Conte has become synonymous for. So I don't see how his tactics could suit currently what the Real Madrid outfit have personnel-wise.
But when you come to a club of this level, okay, 3-5-2, he made work at Juventus and tried to adapt, and we saw Massimiliano Allegri come to Juve, try to adapt, that didn't work, and he's altered. Do you go in at this level? This is the pinnacle of world football. Do you go in with your ideas, or do you go in with the idea that will work best for your players? Because I would argue the latter, because there's no point in, okay, a 3-5-2 worked with Juventus 3 years ago and had some success at Chelsea with, but particularly at Juventus when I had three of the world's best central defenders who were able to execute this. It's not the same group at Real Madrid. Defensively, they have some, well, they have two of the best defenders on the planet in Sergio Ramos and Varane, but there isn't the same makeup of players.
Well, they still have some of the very best central midfielders in world football.
Correct.
Luka Modric.
Central midfielders. But again, to play a 3-5-2, I would personally feel that Conte would come in and adapt a formation and style of play that would suit the group, while then individualising and working with players that way to bring out the football that he wants. But I don't feel that he has to necessarily implement a shape and formation that has worked elsewhere if he doesn't quite have the players there.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from, but I think if you are at the very pinnacle, then you have to make and get working in your favour the players you do have on your pitch. Now, if you were to roughly work out what a 3-5-2 would look like for Real Madrid, well, it wouldn't be having, I would think, Marcelo as your left back. I certainly couldn't see that. He'd have to be that sort of left wing back / left midfielder that roams up and down
for
the pitch all day.
He'd be the left of the five.
He'd be the left of the five. On the right, well, could you see Dani Carvajal playing as either a right centre back or as a right back or as a right wing back? Probably not. It'd be the answer. He'd be
more
getting
of a traditional right back for me.
I couldn't see him doing that. He's a traditional right back, but I couldn't see that. So that would then leave Rafa Varane and Sergio Ramos essentially as your lone two centre backs.
Yeah.
So you have a little bit of an issue there.
They have Nacho who could play in there as well, but again, it's not. Again, to implement a three-man defence in that regard, well, you can be caught out if you don't have immense quality. And Sergio Ramos and Varane are immense quality. But again, I just don't feel that would be a makeup that's suited to this side, particularly Carvajal as a right wing-back. Again, question marks there.
Yep.
But they do have that attacking talent as well. And that's why I feel the 4-3-3 they're currently playing would be suited so they can still exploit the defences with the likes of Bale, Benzema, Isco, Asensio when fully fit. Regardless, Conte, his attitude, his character, is he suited for this group of players? You know what? Maybe yes. Maybe yes. Because, think about this, is a Real Madrid side who the core is still the same. Mm. They've taken out Ronaldo, they've taken out Zidane, but this core is the same. What does Conte offer that most managers don't offer? It's an exceptional level of one-to-one man management coaching.
True.
I would not be surprised that if part of the reason why Luka Modric wanted out in the summer, and while those rumours continue, was simply because he wanted a fresh challenge. He wanted a fresh start. And it's not that they're getting over all this success in Madrid.
You never can you?
You never can. Success is wonderful. But to back it up again and again and again and go through a long season again and again and again, it would take its toll. And sometimes that's why these players move on, for that fresh start, that fresh level of motivation. Mm. I feel that Conte could ensure that motivation levels are sky high for this team through that man management, which, well, the previous managers haven't been that same sort of character. So that's an element which maybe he could bring out the best in a midfield at the moment of Modric, Casemiro and Cruz, who are playing well, but not really.
Not
Real Madrid well. Maybe he could reinvigorate the confidence and the, and again, this has all changed in the last 4 weeks, but Benzema.
That's the one that I think needs to change confidence.
It just feels like he needs someone just to say, just to get him up, keep the motivation level sky high and keep him inspired to continually achieve greatness. And I feel that Conte from that angle could have a point to prove and a role to play at this club. So I do think that he would be a suitable addition to this squad. He does have the Champions League experience. He has had great success now across the Italian top flight and the English Premier League. He's won domestic titles in both. Could be the man that's required to take this, I'm not going to say a Madrid side that have lost motivation to dominate, but a Madrid side who have just flattened out a little recently. I think that could be a worthy appointment, but I don't think the timing's right because it's too early to sack Lopetegui.
You can't sack Lopetegui after 10 matches considering what you went through. Yes, have a chat. We're not saying don't have a chat.
Put the pressure on.
Put the pressure on, but don't execute on plan A, sacking Lopetegui, and then plan B, hiring Antonio Conte.
Okay, hypothetically, six matches between now and the next international break. Mm-hmm. They've got Levante and Pilsen at home, La Liga, Champions League in the next week, mm-hmm. before the big one, the Clásico at the Nou Camp against Barcelona, before three winnable fixtures, Valladolid, the return against Pilsen, Celta Vigo. How many wins does Lopetegui need to keep his job? Or conversely, how many defeats would result in the end?
I'd say three is the magical number. Now, whether it's three wins or three losses, that's going to be the magical number. If he gets the three wins, I think he's safe for the international block.
Okay.
For this international period. But if he gets three losses and maybe one of them is against Barcelona and it happens to be a little bit on the heavy side, that's when the questions will be asked come mid to late November.
I agree. Levante, Pilsen and Celta Vigo. Celta Vigo have been playing nice football.
They have.
But those clubs get your wins, but the Barcelona match will be the telling match, because if it's a heavy defeat, that will mean...
That's the one that will just remonstrate and stay in the mind of Florentino Perez a little bit longer than normal.
Agreed. I think it all really comes down to that. But in the meantime, they're going to have to pick up, I'd say, three out of those other five will need to be wins at the very least. And particularly in the Champions League, I tell you what, they can ill afford to drop points against the Czech champions who just lost convincingly to Roma in the Champions League. I don't think they will. That would be one of the shocks of the season. Nevertheless, the pressure continues to mount on Lopetegui. Yes. Real Madrid without a goal in their last four in all competitions.
And that's what Danny has come through on our Facebook Live. He says, lol, he left after 5 minutes ago, and now he wants back in.
Well, there's not too much to laugh about if you're a Real Madrid fan or member of the club in any capacity there. But, yeah, again, that big game against Levante this weekend. Huge game. They simply must win. But I'm not confident that they just go out there and win, because they haven't shown recently they can score. So how can you win if you don't score? But I think that they will. They'll be reinvigorated after the break, getting back to their international team, coming back, being fresh. Big game ahead.
I actually think they actually might win. And I don't think it'll be a big, heavy scoreline, but I can see now with Sergio Ramos finding the back of the net. Clearly, Toni Kroos found the back of the net from a penalty. Marcelo and Bale both coming back into the lineup.
Well, Bale especially not playing for Wales means now he's ready to go.
So I think with those four elements, I think Real Madrid actually might. I'm really hoping they actually do score a couple of goals and get the 3 points here.
Really, really tough period ahead after the international break as well for Real Madrid. So, as is the case for a number of top clubs in Europe, really is a season-defining period coming up. And Los Blancos now with Antonio Conte against Sport Italia, Corriere dello Sport, reporting strongly that Antonio Conte is being touted as a potential replacement for Lopetegui, who came in only a few months ago. It's a time to deliver, really, for these Los Blancos players. But Real will be a major feature of our program tomorrow as we preview that Levante clash and, of course, look ahead to what's to come right around Europe. Let's go to their crosstown rivals, Barcelona, Rick, because tell me about this. Neymar moves to PSG from Barcelona a couple of seasons ago. Now, we know how much he loves Barcelona. We have seen. All you need to do is, don't need to be an expert journalist. You can just follow Neymar on social media or see a few pictures that go around. Whenever there is an opportunity or a spare moment, he's with his former Barca teammates. I remember when I've seen him with the likes of former players of Xavi, Iniesta, Messi and Suarez, of course, Piqué. They're always together, whether it be in Paris or Barcelona. So clearly the relations are still very strong. Understandably so. It's just a sport at the end of the day. But they've obviously formed great bonds and great relations. But now the reports are suggesting, Rick, that he may be on the way back to Barcelona to play as of next season.
As early as next season, which is very, very interesting. You know, we've all known what the saga was with Neymar. We remember that in 2017, when the QSI, the Qatar Sports Investment Group, decided to throw the world record transfer fee, buy out that release clause, and obviously negotiate a world record fee or in terms of his club wage, we all thought it could never happen. We could never, ever go through. But it did. Everybody opposed it. Everyone, even from the very top of La Liga, said no. And now all of a sudden, because a teammate of Neymar's in Kylian Mbappe, and we've called this on a few occasions, has started to overshadow what the Brazilian has done. He now thinks that he might go back to that former place where he was overshadowed.
That element I don't understand. Because, again, as you said, Neymar, the issue was, I want to get out of Messi's shadow. Now I'm in Mbappe's shadow. Mbappe's got a very long shadow, which will only grow and get bigger. But I don't understand that. What is it? They're conflicting suggestions for me, because you go back to Lionel Messi, you're with Kylian Mbappe, you're still one of the greatest of the modern game. I just don't see what's in it for Neymar here. He wants to succeed. He wants to win.
Correct.
Don't worry about whose shadow you're in, because he, at the moment...
But is that an ego thing then for him?
It is an ego thing.
Because that's the only thing it can come down to.
At what top club are you going to play at where it's... At what top club are you going to play at where there aren't superstars at your level? Mm. There aren't too many of them. He's with one of the future stars of world football. I don't see how that's a factor. And
you don't think it's a factor?
I'll give Neymar some credit. I don't buy into that. He hasn't come out and said, I'm sick of being in the shadow of Mbappe. You watch them play. When Mbappe scored those four goals for Paris Saint-Germain against Lyon, Neymar was happier each time a goal went in. If you're telling me about Cavani, if Cavani was Mbappe, and based on the body language and the passing statistics and all of those factors that we could put to the Neymar-Cavani relationship and say, you know what? You could actually read into that. Last game, PSG beat Lyon 5-0. You know how many passes Neymar made to Cavani? None. That would then start to, you could convince me that maybe there is a bit of an ego issue there and maybe a bit of jealousy. But Cavani is not Mbappe. Mbappe is playing better football than Cavani at the moment. And there doesn't appear on the outside to be any issues. There's celebration, there's joy, there's...
But it was the same thing with Lionel Messi and Neymar. There was the celebration, there was the joy. There was none of this. Yeah, this is why I can see very similar parallels being made with Neymar and Messi.
So what's he do? He leaves Mbappe and he goes back to the world's best in Messi.
Well, I'm not suggesting that's what he does, but he is at least open and receptive to such a move.
Look, I'm not denying the fact that he's open to a move to reunite with those players, but I don't buy... I'm a big fan of Neymar, and I don't buy into the Neymar ego hype that much, nor do I buy into, obviously, Neymar and his diving antics. I don't buy into the fact that he's as much of a... look at me player as people led to believe. Neymar is one of the most targeted players in world football.
That is correct.
He's the highest transferred player ever in world football. And with that comes a lot of pressure. And with that comes a lot of attention. I think maybe there's a bit of an ego. Which one of these top players wouldn't have a bit of an ego?
True.
But I just really feel that there's just a young kid there having some fun, enjoying his football and wanting to play and win at the highest level. And I don't read into it as much as others do. So, yes, obviously, on the outside, it makes sense. Mbappe is a star. Mbappe will be the best player in the world at some point and win many awards, I'm certain. But I don't think that a 19-year-old is really giving Neymar too many nightmares.
I wouldn't think he's giving him too many nightmares, but he is certainly making him wake up once or twice in a cold sweat throughout the night.
He needs that sort of player to help him win what he wants to win anyway. Yes. And he will...
He needs that fatherly type figure or that brotherly figure like he got with Lionel Messi to help Neymar develop his career. That's the same sort of support in my eyes that he is showing Mbappe. But entertain me this.
I will.
Should these reports actually come true and a deal or at least the negotiations begin between PSG and Barcelona, what would Barcelona have to give up to get Neymar back? That's the hardest question that comes out of
it
all.
It's a big question. What could they give up? Because Barcelona are not paying 220 million euro for Neymar.
Absolutely not.
What could they give up? That's a great question. Because
I'd love to know. Anyone on Facebook Live, Twitter, do let us know. We'd love to hear your answer. What would you give up if you're Barcelona to get Neymar back from PSG?
What would you give up? What do they have? Barcelona are full of talent. We know that. But what do they have that would be appealing for Paris Saint-Germain? There's one piece, it's Lionel Messi. Everyone wants Lionel Messi. But again, how do you do a deal for Neymar and Lionel Messi? I wouldn't know. But I don't really think that Barcelona have assets that would be able to replace PSG. So I just don't think that they're, despite the quality, let's go through them. Piqué and the defenders, aging Umtiti makes sense, but clearly not a like-for-like with Neymar in terms of value and everything else. The midfield, Sergio Busquets, Rakitic, Vidal, Artur, who they've just brought in. These aren't assets at that level that could replace them. And up top, well, Suarez, no. Messi.
No.
It's a bit complicated. Coutinho, Dembele. I just don't feel that there's an asset that they could say, look, let's take that for that and let's make a deal without Barcelona having to fork out a great deal of money. And I don't see Barcelona doing that for Neymar.
So the only thing that I can think of, and this is what Vitor's actually come through on our Twitter feed, at FNR_radio, if there is much truth to the reports, we don't know at this stage, they are only reports, He'd be curious to see if Ousmane Dembele is packaged up in the deal. Maybe would you throw in...
Yeah, but he's not at that level.
No, he's not at that level. But you have someone who's 21 in Dembele. Mm. You have someone who's 19 in Mbappe.
It's exciting.
There's your next 12 to 15 year, seasons, essentially, should things obviously pan out at the trajectory that they are both
has
going.
Has he shown enough, though?
Well, he has shown something. I won't say if it's enough. I think that's a little bit early to make a call at this age, but he has shown something, and that's the
something
potential.
Something for PSG to lose arguably their best player.
Well, this is the other question, is it's at what cost?
Well, not that cost. Not that cost for me. I think that it has to be, I think it has to be a like-for-like in some capacity. And there aren't too many like-for-likes with Neymar. We do know that...
Or like-for-like, they're both left-wingers. So like-for-like in that sense, like-for-like quality is a different
quality,
thing.
But also the image. Mm. That's the other
that's
thing.
Right.
We're talking
marketing.
Image, marketing. It's money. It's a business for Paris Saint-Germain. There aren't too many that exist, and Mbappe is one of those players for the future, definitely. But it is an intriguing discussion and a great question that you do raise. What could Barcelona offer for Neymar? But again, even for Barcelona, they've sold him for this much money, and they've got that money now, and they've reinvested into Coutinho, Dembele, and other assets that they're hoping will be their long-term plan. Is it a step backwards if Barcelona go and regain Neymar, the Brazilian, and plan for their next 5 or 6 year stretch with him in the squad?
I think it is. It's a similar argument that I've had with Leonardo Bonucci with Juventus, the defender going from Juve to Milan and then back to Juve.
Yep.
I think it is a little bit of a step backwards because you're not actually planning for your future. You are somehow hoping that what that player delivered in the past is able to be delivered then in the present and hopefully can get even better in the future. I think it is a little bit of a step back.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Should Neymar ever leave Paris Saint-Germain and we put a big cross through Barcelona, where?
The biggest question in world football. Because you would anticipate at some stage or another he will depart the French outfit.
I can't see Neymar remaining a Paris Saint-Germain player for the remainder of his career. So no. I agree with you there. But where? Obviously Real Madrid have been one that have been linked. It still makes some sense, Real Madrid, but I just feel that if Bale were to stay, Isco and Asensio continue developing at the rate they are, and, well, Benzema not really a like-for-like there, but if those three stay, I think that Real will be looking to invest more in a number nine than they would in a Neymar.
Yeah.
And that would be a Lewandowski, who I think will go to Real Madrid at some point. Eden Hazard, of course, strongly linked. They can't have all these players.
No.
Real Madrid, yes, in the mix, but I'm not sold on them yet. I wouldn't know where else Neymar could go.
There couldn't be too many clubs.
Well, there's only one other really that comes to mind. It's Manchester City.
Could you really see him going to Manchester City?
I cannot see him going
unless to Manchester
City.
Unless he wants to partner with Gabriel Jesus, that'd be the only strong link. Maybe with Fernandinho.
Guardiola,
Edison. You know, there are a few players there. Obviously, the coach is a very, very big lure.
Well, there are a few Brazilians there you've reeled off. But obviously, Guardiola with the Barcelona relations, of course, always a factor there. But yeah, the Brazilian players there. Edison, Fernandinho, Jesus. There are a few of them in that squad. Makes sense, but I can't see Neymar moving to the English Premier League and playing for Man City.
No, I can't say that either. Bayern Munich, we know, will possibly need a left winger in the next couple of seasons. They do have Kingsley Coman, but unfortunately his ankles over the last couple of seasons have sort of given way a little bit. But I really can't see Bayern Munich splashing out that sort of money for the Brazilian international.
Really, a return to Spain appears the most normal. There's no club in Italy that could afford him. Nope. Juventus have already spent their money, and there's no other club that could afford him. And he's not going anywhere else in France. So, yeah, it really does feel like it would be only a Real Madrid or Barcelona option, potentially a Man City as a third destination. But a really, really intriguing discussion that these reports have come out now, Neymar to potentially return to Barcelona on the same day that we've had the reports that Antonio Conte might be tipped as a replacement for Lopetegui at Real Madrid. So
I wonder how that combination would go. Conte with Neymar underneath him. That'd be a very fiery encounter.
Would be interesting.
Very interesting.
Would be interesting. Just the last one on Conte before we move away from the Spanish La Liga. What do you feel about Conte coming in now with the squad where it's at? Does he have what it takes to bring this squad? They're a great squad. But they didn't really bring in the top-tier talent in the summer. Similar to Tottenham, as we discussed, with Pochettino in the Premier League. Is there enough for Conte to work with there that, obviously, this is a core squad that's been there and done that the last three seasons, but does he have enough to work with? Or similar to as I believe at the start with Lopetegui, is this just mission impossible?
I won't think it's mission impossible, but the benefit...
Again, Real standards.
This is the issue. It's Real standards. He does have the January transfer window more or less around the corner. Should he be brought in, we're saying in 6 weeks' time. So the end of November.
Then.
He's got the best part of, say, 4 to 6 weeks to work out what his strategy is, what the club he feels needs, and the system he wants to implement. So he gets that sort of, that little bit of a relief that he can go out there. He might not have the checkbook fully opened by Perez, but he certainly can say to him, okay, I want to play in this style, I need this type of player, go out there and get one. And obviously with the lure of the name, the brand, the team, Real Madrid, players are instantly attracted to possibly joining the club. So that is one big factor that could be going in his favour. But it's a tough one to say at this stage. It's a really tough one. I don't know. I'm a bit perplexed, but it's a tough one to provide a fully developed answer.
Well, we'll see. January would be an important period for Antonio Conte should he be appointed prior to that. But regardless, even Flopetegui is still in charge. I think they need a player or two to come in the winter transfer period just to help them in whatever area they need some assistance in. And obviously, injuries will be a big factor on that because they've got a few key attackers out at the moment. And should those injuries go any longer than they should, well, maybe that will be an area to look at. But plenty more to come on Antonio Conte, Neymar, and those Real Madrid-Barcelona links in the coming weeks for sure. Let's go back to our friends at Paris Saint-Germain because that other story you touched on about the financial fair play. So are you telling me that in January there are going to be a few issues for them if they wish to buy or sell?
That is correct.
Or buy.
Buy. Buy is the big one because if you guys remember back to, I think it was in and around the World Cup, there were sanctions by, or there were at least investigations by the financial fair department at UEFA into PSG.
Of course.
They were obviously investigating the whole Neymar transfer. They were still wondering how on earth can a club afford one Brazilian international and then pay another 180 million euros on top of that to get one of the French superstars up and coming in world football in Kylian Mbappe. Considering all that, obviously PSG have had to sell off a lot of their other assets throughout this time in order to try and balance out the spend to revenue balance or the ratio. They managed to somehow get past it at one stage, but then the investigation was still left open. And so the guys at UEFA looked into it, and they were meant to actually come down with a decision, if I remember, either just before the international break or even late September. So in and around that sort of period, there was meant to be a conclusion as to whether PSG's books were cooked or whether they were actually proper and everything was regular and above board. Well, UEFA delayed that decision, if you remember.
So
we need a few more months to keep on working out whether the books are actually legitimate and perfect and everything is above board.
Cooked or booked?
Cooked or booked. Nonetheless.
So there is this pressure on them now that the investigation will continue in this period.
And may continue on.
There you go.
And it actually may affect them because the decision may not be
handed. Just for one transfer period?
For this transfer period because the decision may not be handed down by UEFA until possibly after the January transfer window.
A big blow. But do they need anyone in January?
Well, it depends what their ambition ultimately is and where they sort of sit in terms of the Ligue 1 table and possibly even in the run to the Champions League. The answer is going to be no. We know that. They might want to top up with another central defender. Might be the only thing they're
really
tough.
But I think they're okay.
But they might be okay.
It is a big blow because you don't want to have your hands tied behind your back in the middle of a very important season in your club's history. Mm. But they've got to be content with where they're at. They're flying in Ligue 1. Okay, start in the Champions League. They still have to get through this group. But should they get through this group with Liverpool and Napoli and Crvena Zvezda, they'll be okay.
They should
be. They do need a central defender, though.
They do. Especially the one to replace Thiago Silva or at least begin the succession plan beyond the Brazil international.
I'm looking forward to PSG in this next stretch. A big period because they've got that doubleheader against Napoli in the Champions League, which is going to be next week's game. PSG-Napoli is the one to watch. Ronaldo going back to Old Trafford, yeah, nice story. We've seen that before. PSG-Napoli, this will be as important a game for two interesting football projects at the moment. That's why it will be one not to miss. Paris Saint-Germain simply must win the Champions League this season. This is a season, again, where Neymar and Mbappe were both strongly linked away in the off-season. Those reports and rumours will continue. They've already continued now today with Neymar.
Correct.
This is their moment to cash in and make this happen. They've brought in Gianluigi Buffon. Whether you think that's a positive move or not, regardless, he's 40, so clearly they want to win with him there. They've obviously brought him in to help them win something that, well, he's never won before, but this is their moment. They're 9 from 9 in Ligue 1, and they have no excuse. They have no excuse whatsoever. No. So this doubleheader against Napoli, but particularly the match at home, is a match where if they lose, then the pressure will start. And Tuchel's had a wonderful start to life at Paris Saint-Germain. But again, if they can't win or go close this season, well, I really question whenever they will.
And you've also got to factor in the whole Red Star Belgrade match-fixing allegation saga that has sort of enveloped over the last 10 days or so. I mean, I recall Marco Verratti a couple of days ago saying that, well, the players are actually shocked to have heard that they played against a team that may have been tainted in some description or in some way or another. So that might be a little bit of a psychological effect that they would need to then banish over these next two match days in the UEFA Champions League.
Absolutely. Well, that will certainly be on their minds in the next match day at the very least. And again, it's one that they can ill afford to drop any points in. And at the weekend, they're back in action. Of course, they take on Amiens in Ligue 1, a match which they'll win and they'll go 10 from 10, which will be a record-breaking start to the season. But yeah, lots of pressure now in this doubleheader to come for Tuchel and Paris Saint-Germain, despite that hot start. Some positive news off the field, though, with that speculation as well surrounding the Arsene Wenger links that we touched on the other day. So Wenger still linked with a move, whether you think it's a positive or not. But what I like about this, whether or not he joins as a sporting director or not, is the fact that they're engaging with really experienced personnel in the football world. And, you know, if Wenger and... So they've reported saying that he was having dinner with Tuchel recently.
That is correct.
If Wenger and Tuchel can team up in any capacity at Paris Saint-Germain...
Watch out.
But again, another reason why, more of a reason, more pressure on this club to deliver with so many key and influential people involved. But again, I like that. And we discussed the other day that we feel that could be a very suitable fit for this Paris Saint-Germain side.
He does look like he would be a very good fit. And considering if PSG start to plan for the future, maybe the financial fair play issues come to light and they obviously get given a sanction or two, they're going to need somebody who does that, who does have that youth footballing type experience to unearth these great talents that hopefully can be brought through into the first team. I'm not suggesting that Wenger's decision to be brought in will then work in there or work against them because of the FFP issue, but I'm just saying it's just another element that PSG are now starting to look towards to hopefully keep on increasing their team, increasing their brand, and bring in the very best players.
The last one on PSG before we move on, Buffon on Mbappe. I saw these comments basically coming out and saying that he deserves the top award this year, the Ballon d'Or, for his exploits at club and international level. Buffon, obviously, a couple of kind words for his new teammates, but again, without going into too much depth, he does have a point, but very unlikely that the young Frenchman will win it.
I can't see it happening at this stage, considering he's in line for the Coppa Trofeo, which is the under-21s award, and he's the red-hot favourite to get it. I can't see him walking away with two golden balls under his arm.
You have the Buffon
quotes? I do have the lines here. Just bear with me whilst I scroll down my screen. It actually says, given his qualities, Buffon said, what he shows on the field and how decisive he was during the World Cup, he deserves it. Yes, I cannot say the opposite, but he has an exceptional talent and technical qualities as I have rarely seen. It's a phenomenon, and if he persists in wanting to be the best, if he remains enthusiastic and keeps his normal behaviour, he can last a very long time. So very, very positive words.
Very positive. It does appear that Mbappe will keep a clean head on his shoulders, but again, he was a very important Frenchman, but he hasn't been the top Frenchman, let alone the top player in world football in the last 12 months. Griezmann is my man for that. But, of course, Mbappe is certainly in the mix and deservedly so. A stunning year there. Just wrapping up some of the other stories in France. So, Henry, first match to come this weekend. Lots of focus on Thierry Henry and this Monaco side. He's come out and said that Pep Guardiola and Arsene Wenger have been his coaching references and that he wants to emulate Zinedine Zidane and Deschamps. Well, that's a tough bar to set
and climb over.
Again, my question with Henry at the moment is similar to Lopetegui. You're coming in, all right, clearly a class down from Real Madrid, Monaco, but a Monaco side that were in a semi-final of a Champions League not too long ago, a Monaco team that have a lot of quality there, obviously really failed to unlock that quality this season, but a Monaco club that if he starts and doesn't really achieve much in the opening weeks, which is hard to see happening, pressure on his future will already begin to mount. And you know what? I don't really care for what that means for Thierry Henry's Monaco future, but what does that mean for Thierry Henry's coaching future going forward?
That's going to be the biggest question asked. All of a sudden, should he drop three results from four or the opening four matches? Everyone will be saying, well, he He might be only suited to being an assistant, you know, under Roberto Martinez.
Maybe he's just a good player.
And that's about it.
But that's the thing. If he is to fail with Monaco in the first 6 weeks, which could very well happen, what other... And he's sacked by the end of the year, again, hypothetically. What other club in world football, what top club are going to be like, oh, let's get Thierry Henry, and he was wonderful with Monaco. Let's give him an opportunity to take our squad to where they need to be.
Well, you don't always work out at your first club.
No, you don't.
That's the other thing.
Certainly doesn't help your future prospects.
It certainly doesn't help your future prospects, but you can certainly make your way up from there. You don't have to only be banking yourself and getting the result in one league, and who says you can't go to another one? Who says you can't reinvent yourself?
No, I know, but failure to succeed in your first job does not help prospects for the second job.
Yeah, well, that's in anything. We know that. But I think if we have to give Henry time, we have to give him the benefit of the doubt. He has this role. Let's see what he can do.
Absolutely.
Let's not jump to any form of conclusions.
He wins. I hope he's successful. But again, what we've seen from Monaco recently, you can't say that this team's going to be successful because they're not playing with any heart, any soul. Mm. And the problem is that they've just come back from an international break. So, sure, he was appointed now a week ago, 10 days ago. He's only had the players for the last 48 hours. It's not much time to prepare ahead of a massive, massive test for them this weekend. They have a trip to Strasbourg, which doesn't sound like much, but Strasbourg, ninth, one defeat in their last five, playing some decent football. And they... Again, they'll prove to be a tough test for Monaco on the road. Of course, before Monaco have that massive test in the Champions League, where I really feel Henry will... His future will be dictated by what happens match day 3 and 4 in Europe, Club Brugge home and away.
Could be a very, very interesting fixture to watch. Both teams on 0 points in their Ligue 1 could be determined.
Enormously important for this club. We did speculate that Henry to Bordeaux at the start of the season, those links there, it would have been beneficial for Thierry Henry to be playing Europa League football with a solid club in a solid competition. Now, if Monaco can get themselves into the Europa League, I love that for Thierry Henry because he can challenge for some European silverware.
Yep.
If they make the Europa League, it must mean they're playing better football than they're currently playing now because obviously they would have done enough to get themselves into third in that group. Atleti and Dortmund should go through that group to the knockout stage of the Champions League, and I feel that will be a great test for him into 2019 to get his coaching tenure off to the perfect start, and obviously this Monaco side back up and running.
I mean, the other thing we can't rule out is Monaco still have a chance to qualify for the knockout stage of the Champions League.
They do, but they won't.
I know they won't, but if you think about it, if either Dortmund or Atletico Madrid win home and away over the next two legs,
and they
if
win both.
Monaco win both legs home and away, 6 points and six points, there is a chance. I know it's a long stretch.
Not happening.
I know. I think it won't happen, but you have to give it a possibility.
I don't, but I take your point. But a lot has to go right. But again, that's why I feel, of course, you give it a possibility. Until it's not mathematically possible, it's always possible. And we've seen stranger things happen. But that's why I feel that getting themselves into third in the Europa League, that would be equally as fine and a great test for Thierry Henry to test his wits in the European stage. So I am looking forward to Monaco, again, away to Strasbourg this weekend.
And I'm sure Monaco would want to keep that Club Brugge losing record going on because, as we know, they haven't won a game in so many editions of the Champions League.
Hence
so they wouldn't want to be the first
on
one. That's right.
It's a big one. Are they home or away in that first one? Because regardless, they're 18th in the league at the moment. One win, which came on the opening day of the season. Away to Strasbourg this weekend, and then, 4 days later, away to Club Brugge before a home match against Dijon. A lot of important football ahead in Ligue 1, but full previews of what's to come in Ligue 1 this weekend, tomorrow here at the same time on afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio. Some of the key matches this weekend, we said Paris Saint-Germain take on Amiens, looking to make it 10 wins from 10. Nice host Marseille will be a nice game. Montpellier Bordeaux, but as I said, all eyes certainly on Strasbourg taking on Monaco in, for me, what is the match of the round in France. Let's go to England. Big, big news on Kevin De Bruyne. So the player who was... They were saying that he could be out for 6 months.
They were saying his season was practically done.
It was a disaster for Manchester City. On the eve of the season, they're arguably their best player. Well, hard not to say their best player. Hasn't played in minutes, but he's back and could feature this weekend.
Against Burnley.
That is incredible.
Lucky
Huge timely return for them.
Lucky for Pep Guardiola, he's had a few of his generals that have been able to fill that role that, of course, the Belgian international plays so well. The likes of Leroy Sané and, of course, Riyad Mahrez, who's come on this season.
Bernardo Silva
as well. but it isn't Kevin De Bruyne.
No.
He is another level above those three. Sure, Sané may one day reach that level, but De Bruyne is there.
And again, so it's the output. It's the numbers. De Bruyne, what
it's his
done.
Vision that he can find incredible. The Argentine in Sergio Aguero or the Brazilian Gabriel Jesus that really is a difference maker for the Manchester club.
So they're at home to Burnley this weekend. He's available.
Do you risk him, though? This is the question.
This was what I was going to ask. I don't think you risk him, but I think he plays a second-half cameo.
Because
10 minutes, 15
minutes. Hasn't been picked in the Champions League. He wasn't in the 23-man squad, so he won't be available, obviously, until
he's left out of that squad altogether.
Well, the injury happened just before the actual Champions League did begin. I think it was in between match day one and match day two of the English Premier League. So,
well, if they're saying he's fit, looking at their fixture list, what I say is he plays 15, 20 minutes against Burnley this weekend, gets through that. He has a hard week of training with his side away to Shakhtar Donetsk in the Ukraine, in the Champions League. He has a very tough week on the track, and then he comes to Tottenham and he plays 90 minutes in the Premier League next weekend. So I think a nice busy 10 days ahead for him with a 20-minute cameo this weekend ahead of that big, big game against Tottenham on the road. And then there are plenty of fixtures for him to work himself back into it. They've got Fulham in the Cup. That's the League Cup. They've got Southampton in the League. Then his side play Shakhtar in the Champions League. And then they've got the big one against Manchester United in the Manchester Derby. Plenty of time for him just to find his feet and get back into the action, but not too many big, big games on the cards to come. But I think that's the way you handle it. 20
minutes
against
Burnley. I like that approach. And maybe he might be able to maybe sneak or an assist or two, or maybe even a goal to really celebrate.
And that's what it's all about. Just finding his feet, getting some match fitness back, and popping up with an assist or two. And a good way to do it, a good opportunity, particularly with that cup game against Fulham and a couple of straightforward league games, particularly Southampton and Burnley this weekend to come, given Manchester City's, obviously, their form at home in the competition. But they've got a nice schedule ahead, City. 5 of their next 7 at home. I like City to really continue going on doing what they're doing this season. So it's a big patch now for these Premier League clubs. Chelsea United this weekend. Chelsea, of course, bounced back with a win last time out before the break against Southampton, bouncing back from those two straight draws. But this weekend, Chelsea play United in a match that will define United's season. United play Chelsea and then host Juventus. Two heavy defeats here in these two games, which I will predict. I wait my prediction tomorrow, but I will predict. The Mourinho reign will come to an end for me.
Well, it could be that the reign will actually end by the next international break. Here, this is the actual next 5 or 6 matches between now and that international break. So you've touched on Chelsea this weekend, Juventus midweek. Then it is Everton, and we know what Everton's form is like.
Away.
Yeah. I haven't got up or down. I haven't got it away, unfortunately, or home, but I'm just going on. I've just written it down
I'll
here.
I'll give it to you.
Then they've got Juventus in the Champions League for the second time.
Away.
Then Bournemouth, and Bournemouth are those little plucky club, or has been this season, that can either get you that 4-0 win or that 4-0 loss.
That's also away.
But they're also quite high up the standings at the moment, the Cherries. And then you've got, like you said, the Manchester Derby.
You're right. So they're away to Chelsea, 2 home fixtures against Juventus and Everton, and then 3 straight away. This is it. This is it for Mourinho now.
This is how we were saying with Liverpool prior to the previous international break. This one here could be just as important, if not more so.
You're spot on. And there's no doubt that those three trips in the space of 10 days, Bournemouth, Juventus and, well, City, not really a trip, but those three matches away from Old Trafford, that will be the deciding factor. But having said that, I do feel two heavy defeats now to Chelsea and Juve may not spell the end immediately, but will be the fact that, international break, he's gone. So they need to do something against Chelsea and Juventus, but they're not going to do anything because I think Chelsea are a class above in England, and it's at Stamford Bridge will be very difficult. And Juventus,
no
comparison at the moment for where this United side are at, but two thrilling games to come if you're a Red Devils fan because I suppose you really have nothing to lose. You've got your manager to lose perhaps, but I don't think too many United fans at the moment will be opposed to that. So it's an opportunity to play some teams that you're not expected to win against with a nothing-to-lose attitude. And you know what? Maybe you do spring a surprise, but maybe you don't, which is what I'm thinking. So, look, and Juan Mata said that as well. Yeah. This is a season-defining period now for the club, and they know what's ahead of them. But who knows? Maybe with that fact that they're not favoured to defeat Chelsea, they're not favoured to get points against Juventus, maybe that helps them.
And maybe that win over Newcastle, that come from behind after being down 2-0 after 15 minutes and all of a sudden getting a result there, maybe that might be the impetus and the thing that spurs United to maybe even get that result against Chelsea. And maybe we've read way too much into this run, and all of a sudden they could probably win, say, four matches there, and you know, all of a sudden, hail and praise Jose Mourinho.
It can turn around very quickly, and such is the competitive nature of the Premier League this season, is that, yeah, they've had a poor start to the campaign, and the teams at top are really flying and winning. But look, it's early stages. They're only 7 points off the top.
That's right.
A couple of wins against the direct rivals, they're back in it. So you can't rule them out just yet, but I can. And I will. Let's wrap up some other news in England. Plenty more to come in the second hour. Plenty of news in Germany, Spain and Italy, which we'll get to. But just quickly, talk to me about this this withdrawal of an offer for Wembley by the Fulham owner.
So Sahid Khan, the owner of Fulham, he put an offer in to purchase Wembley Stadium from the English FA.
Okay.
The offer was in and around the £900 million, with that money then being reinvested into grassroots English football. So obviously to bring through the next wave of players.
So he's withdrawn his offer.
He has now withdrawn his offer. He's obviously, they've been in consultations, the English FA, and due to the amount of media press and heat, especially applied to the English FA from even considering the attempt to sell off England's home ground, he said, well, instead of that, I'm just going to withdraw the offer.
Okay. So that's not good for grassroots football in England.
So good luck finding the best part of £900 million.
Interesting. And so that means that the English FA remain in charge.
Correct.
Which other top European federations actually own a venue like that? Because certainly, I know for a fact in Germany and Italy that's not the case. Thinking of another powerhouse in world football, Brazil, that's not the case.
But I don't know the Maracanã, no.
No. Well, that thing, I don't even know if that's still standing. But so we're talking about the three nations that between them have 13 of the 21 World Cups don't own their own stadiums. England do. Does that work against them in any capacity?
Well, in one respect, it probably does.
Financially,
but at the same time, it also means that the ticketing and the food sales and merchandise sales goes directly to them, and then that money can then be fed into the grassroots system. Okay. But at the same time, that also covers off a whole heap of the administration fees, a lot of the fees to actually play the players, any of the bonuses that come from getting very far or even winning major tournaments. So I guess, you know, once you ultimately divvy up that pie, it might not be a lot, but ultimately does get fed out to grassroots football. Obviously, having that $900 million, well, you could essentially invest that into a long-term interest account and then pay everybody off as you see fit that need to be. So it's a little bit of a different way to approach it, but it's a 50-50 call. You'd like to keep your stadium and you'd like to earn the revenue from it and you'd like to say, this is our national team's home. But at the same time, think of the windfall and then obviously the money that can actually help to bring through the next generation of players.
Interesting. As you said, though, hard to find that money again anywhere. So whatever that has broken down, it has broken down. And that is that. The Fulham owner pulls out of a deal to purchase Wembley. Nearing the end to this first hour, a couple of minutes to go. Do stay tuned to our app or our website, footballnationradio.com. Plenty more to come in the second hour. We'll recap that Conte Real story. We'll recap Neymar's potential return to Barcelona and talk more about Kevin De Bruyne and his potential return from injury this weekend, as well as more news across Italy, Spain and Germany. But just to wrap up this first hour, Rick, just touching on that result yesterday, I've got it open here. We discussed Mexico and Chile. Now, you promised the people yesterday that there would be goals, and I've got it up here, Rick. It finished 0-1, Chile winning with a goal in the final minute of play.
Lucky there was a goal. That game... Yes, I did promise goals, but unfortunately, there were the shots on goal. Obviously, the goalkeepers were too strong. Obviously, Claudio Bravo and Guillermo Ochoa, they just did their job in front of the sticks.
They were too good, but I just thought that was a very humorous way to end the program with a 1-0 in a match where you promised our people goals. Don't do that again. The last one, Rick, Usain Bolt, it's official, he's turned down Valletta.
That is correct. The agent of his client, obviously Usain Bolt, has said, we will not engage in media speculation and we will not do deals that come via the media. So the Maltese club, Valletta, no deal.
Okay. There you go. So do you think that means he's certain to sign for the Central Coast Mariners in Australia?
I think he stays on that indefinite trial going forward until he is then seen to be of a high enough quality to play in the A-League.
I agree, but certainly there would have to have been some talks to indicate that, yes, you're very close here for him to say no to a club in Europe, in Malta, nice place to live, nice place to play your football, but interesting.
Nice beaches.
Nice beaches. You've been there?
I have.
Yeah, it's very nice place. Very, very nice place. All right, on that note, visit Malta. But we'll end the program there. More to come in the second hour, so stay tuned to our app or our website, footballnationradio.com. We'll recap those big stories of the day. Conte to Real Madrid, Neymar to Barcelona, and plenty more. So stay tuned. You're with Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea, and this is Afternoons right here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio, with Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea. You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio, with Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Hello and welcome to Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and around the world. Welcome back to the second hour of this wonderful program. Afternoons, welcome to Rick D'Andrea, my co-host here, Adriano Del Monte, taking you through the next hour of action. We are talking international football, looking ahead to what's to come this weekend. A couple of big, big stories breaking overnight in La Liga, Barcelona and Real Madrid. Real Madrid linked with a top, top manager. More on that to come shortly. And Barcelona linked with a former player who has hinted he may like to return to the Nou Camp. So find out who that is very shortly. If you were with us in the first hour, you'll know who that is, so it's no surprise whatsoever. If you'd like to give us a call in the second hour, do so. 9999 is the number. 0399 if you're calling from interstate in Australia, at FNR underscore radio is where you can find us on Twitter. Rick, the news headline recap, please, before we discuss all those big stories yet again.
Thank you, Adriano, and good afternoon to all the listeners. As you touched on a moment ago, reports have started to emerge that Real Madrid are in early negotiations for former Chelsea boss Antonio Conte to take over from current boss Julen Lopetegui. The reports have emerged overnight, very fresh, from two credible Italian and Spanish publications. Reports are also emerging that PSG star Neymar could be preparing to return to Barcelona. The 26-year-old is said to frequently return to the city and meet some of his former teammates, and the rift between him and the club has dissipated over the record-breaking transfer move. Neymar is also reportedly annoyed at being overshadowed by teammate Kylian Mbappe. And staying with PSG, the club are hinting that UEFA's financial fair play investigation will jeopardise their January transfer plans. The French outfit feel UEFA will not be able to conclude its investigation in time to meet the winter transfer period. Kevin De Bruyne, in positive news, could be set to make his return to first-team football this weekend when Manchester City face Burnley. The Belgian international suffered a knee injury in training in mid-August and only returned to training before the international break. Fulham owner Shahid Khan has withdrawn his £900 million offer to purchase Wembley Stadium. Schalke defender Naldo has signed a contract extension with the club, tying the 36-year-old until 2020. He's even suggested that he might even like to play on field well into his 40s. And finally, La Liga boss Javier Tebas is preparing a legal case in order to force La Liga matches to be played in the United States of America. Adrian, that is the latest news. Back to you.
Thank you for that, Rick. USA and La Liga, always a talking point. Again, we start the counter because it's been a long, long saga, that one, but we're still unsure as to whether or not they will play Barcelona against Girona, taking place next year, early January 27 in Miami. Still no confirmation there, but dominating the headlines, of course, those two big stories coming out of Spain. Which is bigger, Conte or Neymar?
Oh, that's a really tough one.
At this point, which is more significant?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, all of a sudden, considering the furor that there was around both individuals, I mean, Neymar with the La Liga not wanting to make the transfer happen and the amount of money that went around, and Lopetegui with the whole Spanish national team and obviously plucking away, you know, him at the last moment before the World Cup. Equal. I can't actually split them because they are both mega, mega stories.
They are. They're enormous stories on a very busy night in Spanish football with no football taking place on the pitch. But Antonio Conte linked to Real Madrid. Now, reports out of Italy are suggesting, Corriere dello Sport and Sport Italia, suggest that Antonio Conte is being tipped as a replacement for Julian Lopetegui, the current Real Madrid boss, off the back of their dreadful form of late. 409 minutes without a goal. They haven't won for a long time. Not much going the way of Los Blancos. Is Antonio Conte the man, though, to come in this early in the season and replace Lopetegui, who, well, very well could have led Spain to great success at the World Cup had he just stayed on?
That's the biggest question going around. All of a sudden, should you need to sack the former Spain international national team coach, is Conte the right one? I've said on many occasions, I don't think he is right. I don't think he can get the personnel to play the style of football that he has made so synonymous with him over the last, what, 8 years, you would think? I don't think he's the right fit.
That's the big question, but he does have elements that can make him the right fit, particularly in his man management. But is he the right fit? Is it the right timing? All questions which certainly need to be asked.
Yeah, so this is that's the biggest thing, is they're all questions that need to be asked. Is it even right to be sacking a coach 10 games into the season?
No, considering you've
just brought him in.
But that's what they do, Real Madrid.
They shouldn't be doing. That's the thing.
That's what they do. They buy what's hot. They sell what's not. I like that.
I like that. We like that, actually, here at FNR Football Nation Radio. We do.
This is where they're at. They've had a slow start to the season. They had a hot start to the season. Then they've just tapered off. They've been poor the last 4 or 5 games. That CSKA Moscow defeat in the Champions League, very poor. But to be fair to Lopetegui, they're 2 points off the top in Spain. And they've been, well, they were amazing against Roma in the Champions League. One poor performance. So they've been poor without it being disastrous to their, I suppose, their position in respective standings. They're, what are they, fourth in La Liga? It hasn't been that poor.
It's not
of a
that
start.
Bad. If you think about it,
if
it's
it gets
not
worse
that
from here, though, then it may be.
Well, if it gets worse from here, but I guess the other thing that Perez is probably also thinking is, we have the Club World Cup to fight for.
That's also true.
So you would think, and that was the one thing that did save Zidane for part of the season. Then obviously he went on to that amazing run that he did in the Champions League. But part of, in my eyes, part of the reason that Zidane stayed is he had the Club World Cup still to contend for.
Massively. Massive reason.
He had gotten this Real Madrid team to have won back-to-back Champions League. So he did deserve, he had the runs on the board to be able to go and fight for that tournament and ultimately win it. And that's what has saved him. I just don't know whether Perez will give Lopetegui that amount of time to get to the December tournament and then possibly claim that and then go on to have further success in 2019.
He won't. He won't. That's the thing. Unless their form turns around, he won't. Because if what you just said is exactly true, if Zinedine Zidane was at risk of being sacked last season this time for the same reasons, and he was coming off the back of 2 Champions League crowns, then everyone is at risk. Yeah. And they don't care about giving Lopetegui time, but you and I both agree they should.
They need to. You can't just expect immediate results. You know, you can't click your fingers and all of a sudden expect the PSG record or the Juventus record. No. You've got to settle in to these sorts of leagues and you've got to settle in to a new way of playing your football. So give him time, Florentino Perez and co. Let the man do his own magic.
I do agree. I absolutely agree. And that's one of 2 big stories on a busy day of Spanish football, because that other one is a potential return of Neymar from Paris Saint-Germain to Barcelona. Incredible. This is incredible. And it's come out of nowhere. As we said in the first hour, sure, we've seen Neymar pictured with his friends and former teammates at Barcelona and in and out of Barcelona from time to time. But the fact that now there's talk saying that he wants to get out of the shadow of Kylian Mbappe, that's for me what I said I can't buy into and I find ridiculous. But Neymar away from PSG again after being linked to Real Madrid in the summer, it appears back on.
It's such an interesting conundrum that has arisen all of a sudden. None of us would have really thought that Neymar was, A, wanting to put himself on the market, B, was open to a return to where he sort of built his stardom and got where he is now. It's just a very, very interesting set of circumstances that has now arisen, which have possibly led to the opening of the door, which may see him return. Now, obviously, there are several hypotheticals in that, but I guess a journey of 1,000 miles starts with one single step. Well, this said. Is that one step at this stage.
Well said. It'll be an interesting journey. Should he go, though, we asked, well, what needs to leave or what do they need to shell out for his potential return if this were to take place? And we have no idea. We really have no idea.
Would you,
well, I have no idea.
If you're Bertemu, the Barcelona president,
sure.
Would you accept Dembele and Umtiti for Neymar? Now, think about it in this way. Silva's 34. You get your number one, number two French international centre-back.
Yep.
You get essentially your number four French international winger. Obviously, Giroud, Griezmann, Mbappe being the front three.
Yeah.
You then get rid of the biggest wage on your books. Yes, you might have to bring in two wages. Don't know where they would be in comparison to what Neymar would be getting. But you are relieving yourself of a whole heap of financial fair play pressure. You are getting two quality replacements. One is still emerging. One is starting to get to the top. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
That's may not have to pay a lot.
You don't have to pay a lot. It may be two players and a little bit of cash.
Correct.
Barcelona getting in a star. And PSG are filling a few holes. I don't mind that at all. And two Frenchmen. I don't mind that. You've got me.
There you go.
On top of that, though, the only issue for me, Barcelona defensively. They'd need to buy some serious defenders.
Yeah, they would.
Having said that, they are linked to Ajax's De Ligt in January. If they bring in a star, one or two young stars, that move then could go ahead. It makes sense. Barcelona need to give themselves an opportunity to be able to part ways with a player of Umtiti's quality. Because, again, we questioned, well, what are the assets Barcelona have? What is of appeal to Paris Saint-Germain? Well, those two Frenchmen would be. But can you orchestrate a deal? That is the dilemma.
Mm. So it's a tough conundrum. I mean, we are not list managers. We are not sporting directors here.
Maybe we should be. That's a great suggestion.
But it's something that I think people need to start thinking about is, okay, if a player is open to such a deal and Barcelona, well, they're not cash strapped. We have seen that. We have seen them splash the cash over the last, three seasons, you really could say.
They're not cash strapped, but they're aging in certain areas of the park and they will need to invest. And they're not a club, prior to the departure of Neymar, they're not a club that really go out and spend as much as Real Madrid do. Sure, they spent 140 on Coutinho and 105 on Dembele, but they haven't done that.
Correct.
They have never done that.
And they've always sort of kept the spending versus revenue gap.
That's right. That's
fairly wide. Exactly. Now it's actually really narrowing down because of all the wages, because of all the pressure on this transfer fees and everything else has sort of enveloped and gone into that cap. It's a lot of money that Barcelona don't really have to play with anymore. I don't think they themselves want to get and be scrutinised by UEFA over financial fair play issues.
Very interesting time at Barcelona, that is for sure. Linked to Neymar once again. And on the pitch, it's even more exciting this weekend because it's their first top-of-the-table clash this season. And would you believe it, Rick, they are not top of the table. They're the second-place team hosting the surprise leaders, Sevilla. Full preview of this match to come tomorrow, of course, but a quick word on this. The obvious one, how important is this for Barcelona? Without a win in four league games, they obviously picked up a win in that stretch at Tottenham in the Champions League, but again, it was a 4-2 win, but not a convincing 4-2. They take on Sevilla, though, who are the form side in Spain, four straight wins in this competition.
No Luis Suarez, who's undergone arthroscopic knee surgery. No Samuel Umtiti, who's also done his knee, and he's probably out till the best part of next year. Two big elements that are missing from this Barcelona
outfit. So you're saying Sevilla can go there and win?
I'm saying Sevilla, despite not having the record against Barcelona recently, if you remember back to the Copa del Rey final, what happened? 4-0, 5-0, some sort
convincing.
Of smashing.
Yep.
If you remember back to the one-off match in the Super Cup as well, what was that?
2-1.
2-1.
2-1 late.
So all of a sudden, the records seem to be stacked against Pablo Machin and his men. But they are and have found a new wave of confidence. It's whether they can translate it and bring it across from the international break, which had stopped their momentum. It's whether they can actually keep that going into this match. That's going to be the big killer dealer for me.
Sevilla have not won at the Nou Camp in La Liga since 2002, Rick.
There you are.
So 16 years since they've won at the Nou Camp in this competition. They did pick up a Copa del Rey win about 10 years ago, but they couldn't be in a better position to do this. They've had four very nice wins recently, of course. How could you forget the one at home against Real Madrid where they won 3-0? And they've taken care of some other sides who have been in some good form. They put six past Levante.
And that was away as well.
That was away. They've been playing good football, and that's what I fear. Barcelona are not at their best defensively. Sevilla have a very potent in-form attack under their Silva scoring goals for fun. A lot of players in good form for the league leaders.
Pablo Sarabia.
That's right. And exactly right. And while we say that they're the surprise leaders, they deserve to be the leaders because their football's been better than all this season. And they're going to be very tough to beat for Barcelona. I'll end up predicting a draw for this game, I know. But Barcelona-Sevilla, top of the table clash. amidst all of these rumours and all of the talk and all the casualties, of course, many players still missing, as you correctly said. So a big, big match in store. Barcelona take on Sevilla in the match of the round in the Spanish La Liga this weekend. Full previews of all the top flight matches in Spain this weekend to come tomorrow. Real Levante, Valencia take on Leganes. Villarreal Atleti is a huge match as well. And our favourites, Betis against Valladolid. A Valladolid side who have the second form side in competition, three straight wins. So it's 7th v 8th there. The winner could go in the top four, would you believe it? So all to play for in Spain this weekend as club competition resumes. Just some of the other Spanish stories before we get to our first break of the day. Obviously, the La Liga and US situation, we said that's going to the courts. Incredible. Still, though, Real Madrid completely against this move. Barcelona, you mentioned Barcelona are looking to switch their preseason tours from the US to Asia, perhaps to allow the exposure in both continents.
Correct. So okay. It's a smart little marketing ploy. It's a little tweak.
Yeah, a small tweak, but a smart tweak.
It's a smart little tweak.
They hit just both markets.
That's right. Maybe Barcelona to Australia during the July, or maybe even the June-July prospects. You know, that'd be very nice, wouldn't it?
And just the last one, Celta Vigo. This is not timely news for them. Maxi Gomez out for a month with a knee sprain. That's not good news for a club who've been playing great football.
Talk about if you needed someone to actually put the goals in the back of the net. Gomez has done that, and unfortunately, they're going to be without him.
That is not good. 1 month, they're saying. So Celta have had a nice start to the season. They've been playing really good football. Iago Aspas, of course, supporting him very nicely, but Celta Vigo mid-table at the moment and without a win in some time. But
scored in every game as well, so it just goes to show how important it is.
They have one of the best attacks in the league, this is the thing. So they are without a win in five in the league. However, they've been playing good football, really, really good football, and they've taken it up to some really good sides. So the fixture list is going to get a bit easier for them, and they'll be without their main man. It could be a danger for them to slip down.
Yeah, it could be. Not a good look, unfortunately.
Well, we'll see. Maybe he's a teammate who's been scoring lots of goals as well, and Iago Aspas can...
Well, he's going to have to pick up that pace. He's going to pick up all the slack.
9 goals between them so far. They're the second best attacking duo after the Sevilla pair of Andre Silva and Ben Yedder. So it's a big blow to a Celta Vigo side sitting 10th in the standings.
Maybe the Danish international Pione Sisto might have to step up a little bit and score another few crackers like he did against Atletico Madrid.
Someone's going to have to step up. We are off to our first break. We're stepping up and we've got plenty more to come. Italian news, German news, and a few updates out of the English Premier League. Again, a recap of those top two stories of the day. Antonio Conte linked to Real Madrid to replace Lopetegui. And Neymar, is he on track for a return to Barcelona? Probably not now, but maybe sometime soon. Stay tuned. This is Afternoons and you are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Welcome back to Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and around the world. We've got you covered with all of the latest news around world football. A busy time in world football, Rick. And if you'd like to talk world football, 9944999 is the number at FNR_radio on Twitter. Rick, let's get back to England and recap those big stories. None bigger than the return of Kevin De Bruyne. Injuries, the theme of the weekend in England. And De Bruyne the first, set to return against Burnley after overcoming his knee injury suffered just prior to the start of the season.
Yeah, in between, I think, match day one and match day two. Very early on. And the reports at that stage, if you recall, were he's going to miss pretty much the season. Or his season was done. So all of a sudden, because the extent of it wasn't really known, it wasn't going to be known how well he was going to recover after surgery, and it wasn't going to be known how much training he would need to do in order to return back to the Kevin De Bruyne of old, it was basically said, well, he's missing 6 months. Well, we know that's not the case. All of a sudden, he's returned after the best part of 2 and a bit months. And yes, he could absolutely feature in some respect in this team for Pep Guardiola.
Do you think it could be a blessing in disguise, this injury for Guardiola? Because we discussed a few players who have come on in leaps and bounds as a result this season. Bernardo Silva, for me, certainly one. Leroy Sané, Riyad Mahrez settling in as a new signing. Do you think that the result of his absence now means that the depth of the squad is stronger and better off for it?
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely better off for it. What it also means is because the Belgian international wasn't included in the Champions League, he's not in the original 23-man roster.
Of course.
For these next, or the 6 match days.
They have to step up.
But on top of that, It means that he can rest one of his key individuals over the weekend and rely on De Bruyne himself to pretty much make the moves and see him make the passes for his team. So he gets an even fresher, higher quality player come the Champions League when they are called upon.
That's right. I like where they're at, City. And similarly to PSG, as we discussed earlier, this is a season for City where they, yes, as much pressure as PSG for me, they need to step up and deliver. Guardiola would be frustrated not having gone deep into a Champions League for a very long time. This is their moment. Timely return for De Bruyne. Players in form, good league form, but a shaky start in the Champions League.
Mm. So obviously we recall back to that 2-1 loss to Lyon.
Even so, the next one, Hoffenheim.
Mm. What was it, 2-1 in 2-1? The end? 87th minute
That's
goal
right.
as well.
Scrappy so, David Silva goal.
Yeah, so not the greatest start in the Premier competition in European club football.
Really, I'm really excited for City, though, in the Champions League this season. Look forward to seeing what takes place there. Talk to me about Liverpool. Some key injuries off the back of this international break. We know Mohamed Salah picked up an injury for Egypt, didn't play in their final game, but some other injuries which could cause some headaches with the doubleheader against Crvena Zvezda to come in the Champions League.
So everything at the moment at Liverpool, it was seeming all nice and rosy, and unfortunately the international break has thrown things into a little bit of a heap. Now, you did touch on Mohamed Salah there. Sadio Mane broke his thumb playing for Senegal, and he's already undergone surgery. And if you've seen
any
images,
can play with a broken thumb.
But if you've seen images floating around, he's already got this very, very thick cast on his right hand. So that doesn't look too, too good. Yes, you do require your 2 feet in order to actually dance around players and score goals, but nonetheless, you still require a free hand movement in order to sort of balance yourself and keep going forward.
That's true.
You throw in Virgil van Dijk, the Dutch captain as well. He obviously picked up a strain, I think it was a hamstring, during the Germany-Netherlands game in the UEFA Nations League. He didn't play, as we know, in the Belgium friendly yesterday morning in Australia. He is said to be okay, but there might be a few little doubts creeping around for the Dutch international. So you add those two players in, and you know, it's just a little bit of an extra question all of a sudden that Jurgen Klopp needs to answer.
It's a headache, but Rick, they've got through their toughest part of the season. So it is a headache, but could be, as we just said for Kevin De Bruyne, it could be a timely headache because Liverpool's upcoming stretch, to be fair to Crvena Zvezda and the league teams that they play, this couldn't be an easier period for them. 6 games in this stretch, Huddersfield away, Crvena Zvezda at home, Cardiff at home. So they're facing the 2 teams in England that will be relegated and arguably the worst team in the Champions League in the next 3. Mm. Then they've got a trip to Arsenal, which will be huge. But then Crvena Zvezda and Fulham at home before another international break.
I'd like to know where Dejan Lovren is in this whole scheme. Now, he obviously has some sort of injury. I think it's a pubic injury, if I'm not mistaken, like osteitis pubis or something to that effect. He obviously hasn't played this season. He's played very, very few times. So Joe Gomez has really stepped up alongside Van Dijk.
Gomez has played every game this season.
All of a sudden, should Van Dijk be down, can they rely on the Croatian international to come into the team? I don't know where he is in terms of his rehab. I don't know whether he is ready. I don't know whether he is training behind the scenes, but he's having to do ever so lightly because he isn't quite ready to go on the park and has match fitness. But I'd just like to know where Liverpool are then defensively in terms of their depth if they have to go down to their 4th centre-back all of a sudden.
I agree, but that's the depth that will be tested now in a relatively easier period, but I don't know where Lovren's at. And they do need some cover there because there aren't too many other central defenders in the squad. There aren't. There are 1 or 2 others and that's it. So if Van Dijk's out and they've got other issues with Lovren, they'll be cutting it thin defensively. But you'd imagine Liverpool will come through this next 6 games unscathed. The big game will be the Arsenal match where Arsenal, of course, right on their tails, just 2 points behind
absolutely
the leading pack. So that'll be a huge game and a huge test for where the Gunners are at, particularly. Just some of the other news. Manchester United, of course, we touched on. Now, Juan Mata has echoed the comments that we said regarding their season-defining stretch to come. Chelsea and Juventus in coming days, we discussed. Everton at home, then 3 trips in 10 days. Juve, Bournemouth, Man City. Big, big period coming up for the Red Devils and a big period that could end the reign of someone at the club, probably Mourinho.
Oh, it's an interesting call, but I do see where you're coming from. But should the unthinkable happen and Mourinho wins a whole heap of these matches, and especially against some very quality opposition?
Can they?
Well, absolutely they can. Anything can happen on any day. I mean,
can it happen six times straight? I don't think so.
I don't think six matches and six wins is going to happen, realistically speaking.
Positive performances. We just want to see some
improvement. But maybe three results in their favour. Maybe three wins out of those six. As tough as they seem at this stage, if all of a sudden the Portuguese tactician can mastermind three wins out of those six, maybe it happens to be that they sneak a 1-0 result against City. Maybe it's a 1-0 result against Bournemouth. Maybe it is a 1-0 win against Juventus. Whatever it happens to be. Then you're going to say to us, well, he probably deserves to keep that job at least going into the January transfer window and rebuild that team.
If that would happen, true. All right, we'll cover this tomorrow when we've got our special guest from Optus Sport on the line to preview the Premier League, Rick. But, all right, let's have a look. Those six games to come. What's your prediction for how many of those six will be won? I'm more so about positive performances because I'm not tipping they'll beat Chelsea or Juventus in the next week, but I'd like to see two, if they're going to lose, I'd like to see them go down with a fight because they're not expected to win. They're not expected to get a point. I'd like to see them just play good football, but how many of those six will they win?
Well, that's the biggest question. I think for to go back to your sort of question, a positive, I think score against Juventus, score against Chelsea. They're your positives.
I agree.
Win against one of those two teams, an even bigger positive. I don't know which one. I don't think they will at this stage, but...
What about over the stretch of six?
Over the stretch...
How many will they win?
Well, over the stretch, I would like to see the back end, two of the three wins. I'd love to see a Man City win over them.
Mm-hmm.
That would be nice, but unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen. But certainly, if they can win three of those six matches, big tick, big tick, big tick, Mourinho stays.
I agree, but is that your prediction?
Three wins from six, yeah.
Okay.
What three or what combination? I don't know. But three wins from six, I think he can certainly achieve.
They'll win one. They will win one of the six, and it will be the Everton or Bournemouth match. One of the six I'll give them. And if they do win one of the next six matches, Mourinho will be gone.
It's a tough one.
No, he'll be gone.
It's a tough one.
Something has to change, Rick. If they win one of the next six, two Champions League, four league, and if you win one in the next four in the league for Manchester United, you're in serious strife. You're not making the top four. They're not making the top four even now for me. But if they win one of the next four, well, they're going to be on 16 points. And 16 points at the moment would have you in sixth place. So they will be dropping points. And I feel one of the next six they will win. And then the owners can decide what they want to do with Mourinho going forward. But a very busy period ahead for Manchester United. Full previews of the Premier League to come tomorrow. Of course, starting with the big one, Chelsea United. Then some other games, City Burnley. Hopefully De Bruyne returns. Arsenal, Leicester, Everton, Crystal Palace, Liverpool, that injury-depleted Liverpool, go to Huddersfield. And West Ham, Tottenham, probably the pick of the bunch outside of Chelsea United. A very intriguing match, that one. Another one as well, Bournemouth. They're sixth. They take on Southampton at home.
Flying.
They could be in the top four if Arsenal and Tottenham drop points. So a big weekend to come this weekend in the English top flight. Full previews to come at the same time tomorrow. Rick, let's switch over to Italy now. Let's talk about some action to come in Italy this weekend. Dominating headlines in Italy, of course, are these Antonio Conte rumours to Real Madrid, but we've covered that in depth. On the pitch this weekend, a club he's been linked to also, AC Milan. They're in action against Inter in the Derby della Madonnina, the big one there, the Milan Derby in Italy. This is as big a Milan Derby as there's been for many years, and the reason why, both sides now well and truly on the up. Milan's a little slower than Inter, but both sides are on the up. Really all to play for in this one. Excited about it. Full preview of this one to come tomorrow as well. But just how important is this for two clubs with fresh faces and fresh stars to play in their first Milan derby and get a taste of what's to come?
One word, four letters. Huge.
Huge.
And you've got to think that Derby della Madonnina over the last, say, five or six seasons has very much sort of faded into the wayside. It's sort of gone away.
It's just been another game.
It's been another game. It hasn't really lived up to the promise and the hype, especially that it delivered during the 80s and the 90s, and then obviously in the mid, I'll say, 2010s, that sort of 2006 to 2011 period. It's really sort of dropped away in the last, say, seven or eight seasons. Now, both teams seem primed. Both teams are ready. They have the squad lists and the squad depth to both challenge for a title, and claiming 3 points against your biggest rival, your crosstown rival, huge.
Huge. And for Milan particularly, Milan currently 10th, Inter currently 3rd, 4 points separate the two sides, Milan with a game in hand. So Milan win this game.
1 point.
1 point behind their rivals with that game to play. It is a huge, huge match because Inter, on the outside, appear to be playing good football. They've had four straight wins in the league. They had that win against PSV. They're 2-2 in the Champions League, so they're looking very good. But Milan quietly building and finding some form of their own. They've only had the one defeat this season, and that was a game they should have won against Napoli as well. And a really intriguing affair. And, of course, if you are with us in Melbourne, we will be at the Carlton Italian Festival in Lygon Street this weekend, Rick, from 2 to 4pm Australian Eastern Daylight Time. And this will be a key talking point in this match. We'll be previewing this match in serious depth there because, obviously, Sunday evening match in Italy. Really excited about previewing that and getting amongst the fans there on in the lead-up to what will be, as you said, a huge and one of the most important derbies to come. Some interesting talking points in the lead-up around Darajan Angolan, the new Inter signing from Roma in the summer. He's come out and spoken openly for the first time since joining the club about the fact that, well, he never intended to leave Italy. He never wanted to leave Italy. He loves the lifestyle and culture there, and that's why he was never into a move or interested in a move to England particularly. He said the lifestyle and culture element is one massive factor for him when playing his football, and he felt disrespected that Roma went behind my back, is what he said, with regards to trying to offload him to a couple of those foreign clubs. So what that says to me is he's very happy to still be in Italy. He's very happy to be at Inter. And now that he's started to find some form and the results are there, he could be a decisive factor in this derby.
He's got a little bit of an X factor about him, doesn't he?
He'll be very important.
Him versus Sousa, the real big battle of the match come Monday morning, if you think about it. Two attacking midfielders, like you say, both have found form. Both are assisting their big strikers up top. Talk about the match or the I can't even speak at the moment. The battle. Talk
big
about
battle.
That is the one that will decide this match.
Really excited to preview that. Full preview to come tomorrow. Just some other stories before we get to our final break of the day. Fiorentina meet Cagliari this weekend. A very, very big match between those two sides. They will commemorate the recent passing of Davide Astori. Of course, played for both clubs. Cagliari for quite a long time as well. So that will be it should be a nice meeting between those two clubs, full of respect there. And Edin Dzeko, a player we touched on earlier in the week, who, well, based on some recent comments, left the door slightly ajar to a Premier League return after that interest from Chelsea in the summer. Reports saying that West Ham might be interested in the player. I don't see him moving to the Premier League personally. I think he's really found a home at Roma. He's playing the best football of his career at Roma. He's the key figure up top at Roma. Stay in Rome.
He won't be going anywhere, my
eyes. I don't think he will. He's as important as any player to that Roma squad. So I just don't. I think that if the offer were to come, Roma would just offer him more to stay. And I think that would be the case. What's the point of moving back to the Premier League? He's already been there. He's already had great success, some of the best success that anyone's ever had. He was obviously part of that City side that won that famous Premier League title under Roberto Mancini. He's already been there. He's done that. Stay in Rome and try and achieve what you can there, particularly off the back of last season's UEFA Champions League run. So all to play for again in the Serie A this weekend. Other games include Juventus, Genoa, Dzeko and Roma to take on Spal. Fiorentina, Cagliari, as we said, but the big one, Inter against Milan. Sampdoria, Sassuolo, another nice match. But all previews of those fixtures to come here on Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio tomorrow at the same time. We're off to our final break for the day. Stay tuned. Plenty more still to come as we wrap up another show. And we will be still taking your calls and your tweets. At FNR_radio is where we are. This is Afternoon. Stay tuned. This is FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR. Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Welcome back for the final time today. This is Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football here in Australia and around the world. Rick, this weekend, big weekend for us here at
it's
FNR.
It's huge.
Where are we off to?
We are off to the Carlton Italian Festa on Lygon Street.
What are we doing?
We are doing a two-hour live show from 2 till 4 at near Piazza Italia.
That's right. Should be very good. We look forward to seeing you all down there. If you are in Melbourne, if you're not, book your flights quickly.
Very, very quickly, actually.
It should be a very good day. I think they're expecting about 100,000 people down there, so it should be a good opportunity to get in front of the fans. Of course, a couple of big games to preview in the lead-up to that, the Milan Derby, as we said. There's some big, big matches this weekend. Important, and we'll also be reviewing the action on Saturday evening, so do come down and say hello. Carlton Italian Festa, Lygon Street, Carlton. We are near the Piazza broadcasting live. You cannot miss us. We'll be there in full force.
And something you cannot miss, I've just seen this because it's popped up on my social media feed.
What's that?
Wayne Rooney's strike for DC United in order to take the lead in the Major League Soccer, the MLS in America. Get yourself in front of a PC. Get your mobile phone out. Type it in. What a free kick strike.
From some distance, wasn't it?
Some 35 yards out, he has
just beaten, keep going.
He has beaten the goalkeeper and into the top corner. There was no dip. This was a straight out and out rising shot. What a cracking shot. I might just retweet that out or share that across our Facebook feed very, very soon.
Very, very good. He's doing some okay things in there. Not as much of an impact as Zlatan's had, but certainly good to see these legends of football just giving back to some of these lesser competitions and developing competitions around the world. But Rooney, with a wonderful goal, do check it out. We will tweet it around at some point at FNR_radio. Rick, we are nearing the end to this program. Some news out of Germany. You're touching off the top, Naldo signing a contract extension and believing he can play until the age of 40+.
It is normally something that isn't seen. Normally you start to say to yourself, well, I'm going to wind down. I've had a great career. I've played for so many years across the Bundesliga, in particular with Naldo. But no, he's decided he can keep on going. His body obviously feels
good on him.
Good on it, or good at the moment. He's able to still command a first-team appearance. So Dominic Tedesco has been able to convince him to sign on at least until 2020. And on top of that, Naldo himself is saying, well, why can't I play until I'm in my 40s? That's the other thing that sort of gets to me. And I'm thinking to myself, if only I had one of those professional careers, it may have allowed me to keep on playing until I was well into my 20s and now into my 30s. But nonetheless, well done to Naldo and congratulations on the new contract.
Well, his side aren't doing too well at the moment, so maybe he didn't want to retire and hang the boots up while they were struggling. But of course, they lost their first five for the season. They're finally out of the relegation zone with 6 points, 2 wins from their last two and 2 for the season. So far, big test for Schalke this weekend, though they take on the high-flying Werder Bremen, looking to make it 3 from 3. Exciting time in German football. Of course, Borussia Dortmund really, really playing good football at the top of the table. They're in action this weekend against Stuttgart on the road. But Dortmund, really the story of the season so far, a really difficult season last time out. And they've just found some rhythm and some stability under Lucien Favre and playing really well.
They have actually this season. It's just a matter of whether we see them continue this on. They did something similar last season and then really fell apart. And then obviously we know the whole story with Peter Bosch and Peter Stöger and what happened there. But at this stage, under Lucien Favre, they are very much continuing on that tradition of playing very, very good football. Unfortunately for them, their Swiss international, their centre-back, Manuel Akanji, he's picked up a hip strain on international duty and will be out for 3 weeks. So that's going to be a test. All of a sudden, Thomas Delaney and obviously Axel Witsel, those two fulcrum players in that defensive midfield for BVB, they're going to obviously have to press back a little bit more than they normally would have in order to cover the hole.
Yeah, big blow for Dortmund. Just their rivals, or their big rivals there, and the threat, I suppose, to their championship, Bayern Munich this season. They've had a strange campaign so far, and they would have been thankful for that quick break that they had. They're away to Wolfsburg at the weekend, but they too really struggling, winless in 4 in all competitions, and just struggling for all sorts of form. I'm looking forward to previewing their match tomorrow and seeing where they're at. One of their key players that they lost over the summer transfer period, I don't know why I find it funny, but they've lost a key player. He's moved on. But he's still making headlines for similar reasons he was making headlines for while at Bayern Munich, and it's one Arturo Vidal.
Yeah, so there's been some strange developments overnight, but as we know, Vidal actually played in that Mexico-Chile friendly international that I thought was
going to be a thrilling match.
A thrilling 1-0 match that unfortunately didn't result in too many goals, and the goal happened in the 92nd, 93rd minute. Nonetheless, Vidal was actually meant to appear in a Munich court, and he was meant to appear in a court because he was actually involved in an incident where he allegedly, and now he's been convicted, but he allegedly struck a patron of a nightclub over the head with a bottle of vodka.
That's not good.
It's not good. So the gentleman had to take several weeks off work. He obviously had several medical bills to cover. And unfortunately now the Chilean international has been fined €800,000 because he actually didn't attend. So he's in contempt of court in that jurisdiction and obviously has to pay a lot of medical bills towards this person.
Well, there you go. I suppose that's a deserved punishment. But Vidal making headlines yet again.
And it's similar to what Arda Turan, from from Besiktas. My apologies. He's actually obviously had to go some similar sort of issues because he allegedly struck a Turkish pop star in the nose during a Istanbul nightclub appearance.
It is all happening. It's all happening. Başakşehir here plays for you in the Turkish Super League. Of course, the former Barcelona man, who I think is actually on loan from Barca, but he won't ever return to Barcelona. That's for sure. The final story from Germany, Wenger on Mesut Ozil. So Arsene has suggested that maybe he should be reconsidered for the German national team, obviously off the back of their disastrous stretch, which we did say yesterday was the arguably the darkest period in German football history.
It is a dark period, and he's urging Jogi Löw to go out there and at least have many a conversation about trying to entice the former German international to return into the fold and hopefully smooth things over due to the racism claims that emerged post-World Cup with the Arsenal superstar. So Wenger is at least trying to give some advice, and hopefully for Ozil's sake, he's able to take it on board. But obviously, for footballing's sake, maybe Löw is able to help Ozil be reintegrated back into this German team and lead them on to success, maybe at Euro 2020 or Qatar 2022.
I think definitely they should. But how would the fans accept that?
That's the hardest question going around, isn't it? It's a tough one.
Look, I think Germany need Ozil, and I think Ozil needs Germany. I think it would be certainly a conversation worth having. Whether or not they follow through with it, we will see. But a couple of key players with issues at international level. Benzema's been the most documented one over the journey. Ozil a bit more recently. But look, it's a big weekend for German football, and particularly Bayern Munich. We said the correlation between them being successful and the German national team. They're away to Wolfsburg in a match which will headline all the fixtures this weekend in Germany, but full previews of them to come tomorrow at this time. We are with you 12 p.m. till 2 p.m. each and every day, Australian Eastern Daylight Time, right here on FNR, Football Nation Radio. That is all for today, Rick.
Big show.
Huge show. Conte to Madrid and Neymar to Barcelona. I tell you what, when I woke up this morning, I didn't think we'd be talking about that, but that we did, and it was very enjoyable. Thank you, as always. For now, though, for myself, Adriano Del Monte, this has been another edition of Afternoons here on FNR, Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and right around the world. Until next time, it's goodbye for now.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio with Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea.